Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
And welcome back to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production with a very special guest, and a frequent guest on the show, Alex Ben Block out of L.A., a senior columnist for Hollywood Today, an online news magazine at hollywoodtoday.net, also editor of an upcoming almanac of great movies from the past 100 years for George Lucas Books, and a noted show business historian as well. You know Alex, if you're a regular visitor to The Advertising Show, always a pleasure to have Alex on, and we will do that here in just a few minutes. We also have, coming up very shortly, Gene Bliss's The Customer Experience, and what that is all about is syncing up your resources to your customers. She'll talk about that later on in the show. Intuitive marketing with our marketing insider, Patrick Meyer, here with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth. And how are you doing today, Bradley?
Well, I'm doing great. And, you know, it's always such a pleasure having Alex on the show. It makes your job and mine so much easier because, like the Energizer Bunny, we just wind him up and let him go.
He keeps it going and going and going. We've got, you know, obviously, last time we had Alex on, we were talking about the writer's strike, and of course that has now been settled, and things are kind of getting back to normal. But this is interesting. CBS was looking at what is this? I don't even know what the publication is, but it doesn't matter. It says CBS on Tuesday promised a leaner television production business in the wake of that strike, echoing other media groups who have vowed to seize on the work stoppage to make changes. Les Moonves, the chief executive officer, said CBS would order fewer pilot episodes of new programs, scale down its annual presentation to advertisers, and offer less lucrative production deals to writers. That doesn't sound like a settlement. He said the strike has given us the ability to examine how we get from point A to point B, describing the changes as fundamental. So what they're looking at, Moonves made his remarks as CBS recorded fourth quarter earnings had fallen 14% from a year ago. That's $286.2 mil, dropping 3% to 3.75. So very interesting.
Yeah. You know, and I'm sure Alex will address a lot of that and what's going on with what is now going to go on since the writer's strike and Academy Awards, a bunch of other good stuff. You know, from the category of honesty and journalism.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the Academy Awards, too. Yeah, that's going to be great. Yeah, go ahead,
Brad. Exactly. In fact, I think I saw him right next to Halle Berry, and he was saying, you know, we people of color – have done such a good job. Anyway, from the category of honesty and journalism, Ray, you're familiar with the group The Black Crowes, right?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am.
Well, apparently their new release, newest release in 7 years, has been given a 2.5-star rating out of 5 by Maxim magazine. The only problem is that the magazine hadn't actually heard the album before the review was written in this issue. Yeah. It's a crazy thing. You know, new album hasn't left the gang much room for growth, according to the magazine, but Black Crowes manager Peter Angelus says the writer never heard the album because advance copies were never available. In a statement on the band's website, Argulis also mentions when confronted with the fact that they had never heard the album, they were claiming it was an educated guess on Maxim's part. I find that very
How about
very
an uneducated
strange.
Guess?
That's, you know, that funny. Could cost your publication credibility if you were like a real magazine.
Yeah, that's just a little bit. I totally agree with that. Hey, let's stop here for just a moment. We've got Gene Bliss all ready to rock and roll. The customer experience, syncing up with resources to consumers. Can you do that? We'll find out how, and that's coming up next.
Welcome to the customer experience. Making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
Do you know your customers by profitability segments and how their needs vary? Especially where resources are tight, you'll want to cluster your customers by how much revenue they generate and their profitability. From these customer clusters, you should identify commonalities in what they need from you. The intention is never to underserve customers with less profitability, but you must be absolutely aware of those power players on whom your livelihood may be most dependent. Once you know the clusters, you can come up with creative ways for serving customers. For example, you may have a wide number of smaller customers who, rather than sending out an individual service rep or agent to call on them separately, can be brought together for a networking event that actually benefits all of them and reduces your cost for servicing them. This becomes a win-win for many organizations who then can apply personalized resources to large accounts that require more attention. And the resource allocation is in direct correlation to customer growth and profitability.
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is Corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
And it's Gene Bliss here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, and about to welcome Alex Van Block into The Advertising Show. Basically, the guys, Alex has been around for a little while and done a bunch of things, including for the past 5 years on the NPR affiliate in Southern California, KPCC FM's call sheet, and a nationally syndicated program here he's got in his bio, The Advertising Show. We like that, too, and are proud to have him as part of the show. As I said before, you'll hear Alex frequently throughout the year, and we thought it was timely to bring him back specifically this weekend show and find out what's going on with the settlement and, of course, all of the good stuff that goes on there in Hollywood. So we'll have Alex on in just a few minutes. What do you have there? What is that?
Well, you know, who would have ever thought we would hear that Google shares are falling this past week after the U.S. industry report published showed a decline in a key measure of how Google gets paid by advertisers. Wall Street analysts said that the sell-off was accelerated by brokerage profit and price target downgrades. UBS analysts out of their 12-month target on Google from 650 to 9, I'm sorry, from 650 to 590, and a new low among Wall Street analysts. Then they warned, Ray, that the international growth is a concern, including Britain, Google's second largest market. And, you know, gosh, what was it? Not so long ago, Google was up to $750 a share. So there's concern over, potential growth for Google and, I guess inflationary issues as well worldwide.
I guess you can't grow until you take some, maybe some calculated risks or something like that. So, you know, I don't see that as a big deal, but obviously something to look out for there. I don't know. We're both DVR type people here. You know, we love the digital video recorders, and they've always been a potential problem for advertisers. You know, the fact that you've got people skipping your commercials, but looking to strike a blow against the proliferation of digital video recorders, the ABC network, its affiliated broadcast station, and Cox Communications Cable are establishing an on-demand video service that would allow viewers to watch the ABC shows like Lost and Desperate Housewives, and they can watch them anytime they choose. Here's the catch. It's using a new technology that disables the viewer's ability to fast forward through the commercials. The system, which ABC is expected to announce very soon, or has, I guess they have announced it, has been tested over the last several months in homes served by Cox in Orange County. The programs replayed on the video on-demand service would include advertising sold by the network as well as by the local ABC stations, but the total number of commercials in the shows would be far less than the over-the-air broadcast version of the shows. What do you think about that?
You know, well, that's something interesting. I think we're going to get, rather than myself to weigh in on that, I'd love to get Alex's take on that. I'd like to hear more about his thoughts. And more importantly, would we expect other networks to follow ABC's lead? That'll be an interesting topic to cover with Alex next segment.
As with a bunch of stuff here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. By the way, The Advertising Show being powered by Shipple.com. And a platform called Tendency. It's an incredibly killer and hot marketing platform. It's SCHIPUL.com, Shipple.com. Check it out. It really works for us, and we think it'll work for you, too. It'll get your shirts whiter and brighter, too, probably.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillen and Brad Forsyth.
Who's got baby oil?
We are back on The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth and our very special guest out of Southern California, Alex Ben Block, senior columnist for Hollywood Today, hollywoodtoday.net. And as always, we basically ask the questions and then we sit back and go out for a beer and come back. And then Alex is still talking, which is a good thing because he knows a lot. Alex, it's always a pleasure. You're a great guest here and a regular feature, obviously, on The Advertising Show. It's good to talk with you again.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here, but you never bring me back a beer.
Brad drank
it. Ray said you don't drink.
Well, that's true, but you can bring me back a soda.
Okay, soda would be fine. Alex, good to have you here. What's going on out there?
Well, you know, the Academy Awards, the end of the writer's strike, the possibility of a Screen Actors Guild strike still ahead of us, lots of turmoil about the business model and whether the internet is the future or not the future, and what happens to broadcast TV. So it's interesting times.
Just a few things happening.
Yeah, let's jump into, since we just passed the Academy Awards this past Sunday, let's jump into that. Despite favorable reviews, Alex, for this year's Academy Awards, you know, we have hit an all-time low, I guess, as far as ratings, and some think that it's maybe a potential hangover from the writer's strike and a lack of time to actually promote the program. Your thoughts on this, Alex?
Well, first of all, you're correct. About 32 million people in the United States viewed the show, which was, I believe, the least watched Oscar telecast ever, going back to when it first went on TV in 1953. And certainly since they began keeping more detailed records in about 1974. And there's a few reasons why this happened. I think the writer's strike hangover was part of it. I think more importantly, there were a lot of pretty obscure movies up for the awards, and the ratings tend to correlate with the popularity of the movies that are up that year. And with the exception of Juno, none of the big movies even made over $100 million at the box office. Even with their Oscar bump, they didn't make that much more. And you have some really dark stuff. You know, There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men are not easy pictures. They're not for everybody. It's not, you know, this is not feel-good cinema. And so I think that had an effect. And not as many stars as usual. And I think also, you know, the whole production and Jon Stewart as the host, although he has a following, the following is on cable TV. And he has a style, but his style is kind of that you know, sly wit, and it's not broad and like Billy Crystal. It doesn't play as widely. And so it appears there was a lot of early tune-out. A lot of people just ignored this show. And although I thought Gil Cates, the producer, did a pretty good job, not many people were watching.
You know, I understand the low ratings of this year's Academy Awards is part of a larger trend that has seen down ratings for all award shows, Alex. Is the public tiring of watching rich celebrities pat each other on the back, or just simply tiring of celebrities in general, since there's so much media coverage today on celebrities?
It sure seems that way. And also, I think a lot of the celebrity coverage is so tawdry and so superficial and so silly, you know, chasing Paris Hilton around with a camera. Who cares? You know, Britney Spears, I feel sorry for the poor girl, but dude, is that really the big news that needs to be in every form of media constantly? And I think a lot of people just are turned off to the whole thing. And the whole self-congratulatory atmosphere of Hollywood at a time that the economy is down and people are losing their jobs and, you know, there's a lot going on in this country that is very disturbing. We're at war. But this is not a time to put on your swanky dress and go tell each other how wonderful you are. And it didn't help that almost all the winners were telegraphed in advance, and that those movies that were telegraphed in large parts of the country weren't even available in the theaters. Even if you wanted to see them, you couldn't see them.
You're kidding.
You know, they're going to have to wait to see them on home video, and even then it'll take a while to get to the local Blockbuster.
That's kind of stupid.
So, yeah, I mean, culturally, the Oscars have a problem. I don't know how they're going to fix it.
Do you think we've hit a diminishing return on just overexposing that particular product? I mean, we've got Entertainment Tonight, Inside Edition, TMZ. We've got, you know, at one time many years ago, People Magazine was all by itself. Now it's a very crowded category. I mean, where do you draw the line on overexposure with celebrities?
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know, people who want it, and there are some, now can get it so many places in so many ways, and all this snarky stuff that's available on the internet for those who want it. and there's social networking sites, and they're swapping all this information around. I think there is a saturation point, and I think, you know, that it's hurting Hollywood. It hurt the Oscars. It hurt the Grammys. You know, it's hard to say that the People's Choice Awards or the Golden Globes didn't do as well this year because they were pretty much devastated by the writer's strike. But this, it's not just this year. We saw it last year, too. The numbers were down for a lot of the award shows. And I think there's just less of a feeling that it's time to have a party and slap each other on the back and watch the people in Hollywood who are already too rich get richer.
Well, so is it too early to say that we're seeing the usual box office bump for the Oscar nominees this year, or does that take place over the next few weeks?
No, actually, it's not too. In fact, it's kind of over already. The biggest bump comes after the nomination and before the show. And in this case, most of the movies that we were just talking about, with the exception of Juno, did the majority of their box office since then. I don't have the number in front of me, but There Will Be Blood has done something like 80% of its box office since it got the nomination. And most of these pictures come from the specialty wing of major studios, and they're actually designed and planned to peak at the point of the Oscar ratings in hopes that this will happen. And so they've gotten some bump. It's just not as big a bump as we've seen in other years. These are not blockbuster bumps. I mean, you know, whatever you think of No Country for Old Men, you know, I found it a very dark, difficult picture with a where the bad guy wins in the end, and it's just a tough picture to take. And, you know, the critics may say it's brilliant, but it's just not for everybody.
Well, moving on, the writer's strike is now over, but, you know, what's the fallout here? What lingers for the networks and cable networks and broadcast networks alike?
Well, you know, we talked about what's going on with network television. That clearly is the biggest impact. The movie business has a different set of problems. What's going on is that we're going to have the lowest number of pilots, shows prepared for possible use on a network schedule, probably in modern history. Part of this is that NBC is basically out of the pilot business. They say now they're only going to make pilots when they're convinced they're going to make the show. CBS, ABC, Fox, both because of the shortness of time due to the writer's strike and because of what Les Moonves has been talking about, a kind of restructuring, a rethinking of the process, they simply are going to make fewer pilots, and they still plan to have the upfront advertising in May. They still plan to have a new fall season next September, but they're trying to trim costs. And remember, during the writer's strike, they used a force majeure clause to end a lot of contracts with writers and producers and so forth, whose only job was to develop new material. Now they aren't opening the door and saying, oh, come on back. Instead, what they're saying is, all right, we're now very selectively going to pick a few of you to bring back to join those who we kept, who were the people who were mainly running current shows. And so the whole process is taking on a different hue this year. Now, whether this is long-term and real or not, we're going to have to wait and see. They always, you know, when you have a short season, everybody says, oh, this is it's going to change everything. But the following year, they're back playing the game again. So we'll see.
Let's take a break here for just a moment, Brad. Alex Ben Block is our special guest, always a special guest on the Advertising Show. Alex is senior columnist for Hollywood Today, hollywoodtoday.net. And we'll have more conversation with Alex out of Southern California with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth here on the Advertising Show. Hope you can stick around.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is the Advertising Show.
No matter what shape your stomach's in.
Alex Ben Block, senior columnist for Hollywood Today. HollywoodToday.net is the place you'll find about Alex as well. Alex also has a famous singer-songwriter daughter named Haley Taylor, H-A-Y-L-E-R,
H-A-Y-L-E-Y
Taylor. Yeah, and you said that Haley is now, she's got one of her records on YouTube, is that right?
Yeah, she has a video on YouTube from her TV series for City Sessions, which is for satellite TV, and she has several of her songs, and you can see her and hear her, and hear how terrific she is. And she's just finishing up her second album, and we're looking forward to that a little later this year.
Isn't that great how we still call them albums? I love it. H-A-Y-L-E-Y, Taylor,
is
the name.
T-A-Y-L-O-R.
Okay, there you go. That's good to know, too.
Go to HaleyTaylor.com, and it'll take you to her MySpace page.
Okay.
And you can listen to her music, and you can read about her.
Okay, so you've got something on YouTube as well, Alex?
I do. I've done my latest video rant. I was absolutely outraged by the fine that the ABC stations got for the show NYPD Blue for, in the course of a drama, airing a glimpse of a woman's rear end.
Uh-huh.
And so I've exaggerated a little bit for comic effect, but to make the point. And if you go to YouTube and look me up, Alex Ben Block, under Hollywood Today, I think it'll come up and you can see what I have to say and why I believe I would make a better commissioner of the FCC than the incumbent.
And okay. It's G-rated, right?
Well,
yeah, it's G-rated, but maybe PG-rated would be better.
Alex is wearing a thong, so that's, you know, you got to be cautious on that end, but
yeah,
that's
it's
fine.
It's for language, not for clothes.
There you go. Go ahead,
let's
Brian.
Go back to what you're finishing up on the writer's strike. You mentioned that pilots will only be developed when they know they're going to broadcast the show. If I heard you correctly,
well,
does
I'm
that
NBC.
Mean? What? I'm sorry.
NBC is saying that. The other networks are not saying that.
Right. Right. Exactly. And I'm curious. Does that mean less risk taking of on a network that's, I guess, kind of pretty known for risk taking with, you know, coming out with Seinfeld years ago and staying with it when it was not doing well in the ratings? Is this a change in attitude with regard to risk taking?
Absolutely. It's a dramatic flip flop. In fact, because this was a network only a year or two ago that made more pilots than anybody else, because they wanted to have more choices, because that was going to give them the best shows. Now suddenly they're the network that's making the fewest pilots, and somehow they think that's going to give them the best shows. Doesn't seem like one and one adds up to two to me, but, you know, this is what Jeff Zucker and the team over there are doing under tremendous pressure from General Electric to cut costs in light of the big drop in advertising revenue that they've suffered. And so they're trying to figure out how to do it for less.
So with the understanding that NBC is moving to a 52-week programming schedule, does that mean they're going to be sitting out the annual upfronts this year?
Well, they say they're going to do the upfronts differently. And, yes, they do plan to have a 52-week schedule. Of course, they've announced that before, and it didn't come true. But they're saying they're going to try and launch shows at, you know, different and appropriate times. You know, NBC is going to go to a 52-week schedule. And they say they're going to launch shows throughout the year. And, you know, you look at the logic here. If you have fewer choices, is that going to make for better shows? That's what we're going to have to wait and see.
That makes sense, yeah.
You know, before we talk about the writers and directors' new deal and what it means to the Internet, when do we begin, Alex, to see new scripts finalized and thus new programs produced on the networks?
Well, actually, you've seen a couple of new shows. Saturday Night Live has already had a new episode. And, of course, the talk shows are back. But we should be seeing major series episodes, in some cases, as soon as sometime in March, because some of those scripts were in process. They were already being worked on. They just needed a polish. And in some cases, they really raced to get back. And certainly, I think by the time we come around to sweeps again in May, I think a number of shows are going to have new series, but not at the levels that you've seen, say, last year, but more than we've been seeing recently.
Yeah, so can you decipher for us the agreement and give us your sense of, for the, both the short-term and long-term, as far as writers and directors' new deal and what it means to the Internet?
Well, first of all, I think it's a very fair deal for the writers. It's certainly not all they wanted, and in some ways it's not all they dreamed about, but it's pretty good. But what they've done is, remember, the management said, we're not going to make a deal that's going to handcuff us in terms of developing new models in the new media. And so what they've said is, okay, if a show has $15,000 a minute of production cost or more, then it's automatically going to become a WGA show and pretty much a SAG show and a DGA show as well, meaning the guilds involving writers, directors, and actors will all have some say, and you'll only be able to use those. But for those shows which are under $15,000 a minute, which is pretty much everything on the Internet at the moment, you know, there are no restrictions. You still don't have to use a WGA writer unless you want to. And so that's going to allow the, you know, the great fervor of development and the entrepreneurial activity that's driven the web so far to continue, hopefully, even as these big companies work hard to buy up as much real estate and dominate and control the Internet as much as possible. It's such a big playing field that, you know, the WGA new contract is not going to interfere with the guy in his garage who's got a great idea who wants to be the next fill-in-the-blank big star.
It's the Advertising Show here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, our special guest out of Southern California, Alex Ben Block. More with Alex and Ray and Brad in just a minute.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Give way to your heart.
On The Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and a very special guest, Alex Ben Block, senior columnist for Hollywood Today at hollywoodtoday.net. Alex, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And just to wrap up what you were mentioning about the $15K production cost per 60 and the Internet, with technology, I would assume, Alex, that, you know, cost is going to get less before it gets more, and it would be a far cry to ever expect $15K per 60 to ever migrate to the Internet, wouldn't you think?
Well, certainly in terms of technology, you're absolutely correct. But you have to understand, this is envisioning the use of actors who may get paid above scale, directors who may get special fees, writers who get paid more than minimum wage, production values, locations, and so forth that add expense no matter what the technology is. So even though now that number is probably pretty high, they see in the future where that number will become more a norm and maybe get passed.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit for a moment about the curious case of Quarter Life. It had a circuitous route to the networks. Talk a little bit about that, Alex.
Well, Quarter Life is Marshall Herskovitz and Edward Zwick, who gave us 30-something and My So-Called Life and the movie Black Diamond and other stuff. They're very talented guys. So Herskovitz wrote in 2007 an op-ed in the LA Times saying that they weren't going to work in television anymore, because it wasn't fair. These big companies dominated everything. They told them they took away their creativity, they took away their profits, they took away their ownership, and they were going to the Internet. So they went to the Internet and they formed this company to make Quarter Life, which is a phrase that represents 20-somethings, people in their 20s who have one quarter of their life used so far. And so it's about this young group of people with a no-name cast, bare-budget production values under normal TV. They did 8-minute segments. They created a social networking community as well as part of this idea. And then during the writer's strike, Ben Silverman, the new CEO of NBC, said, let's buy that and put it on TV. So he took the episodes as they were already shown on MySpace, on Herskowitz's site and other places, even ran it on MTV last week as a preview, and they put it on NBC in prime time, and it was an absolute disaster. It's a big bomb. And so the numbers, it came in a poor third in its time period in the key demo. It did very poorly even with women and teenagers who were supposed to be the audience. So the question becomes why? Well, it was up against tough competition, And then there's the fact that a lot of people already saw the episodes online. Maybe that's why they didn't come, or maybe they just don't care. And then the show is to air again several times, but it's up against very tough competition. And so the whole dream, Herskovitz and Zwick put up their own money. They broke the number one rule of Hollywood, which is always use OPM, other people's money. This is their money. And they sold the show to NBC for a lower than usual
license. That's interesting. You know, I keep seeing promos every time I turn on the watching network, NBC network. They're always promoting that program in the lower right-hand corner of the screen there. You know, we can't talk about TV without talking about American Idol, and it's back. And certainly, I believe it's been dominating the ratings again. I'm curious, is this more of a reflection of the strike, or do viewers really like Idol that much?
Viewers really like Idol that much. Every year we say, oh, it can't go up again, can it? And every year it goes up. And last year wasn't a vintage year, but it was still a good year. And this year is looking like a better year.
Wow.
It's like this big, powerful machine that Fox can roll out every January, and they just eat up those ratings all the way to May. And this year doesn't look any different.
Wow.
My goodness. Well, any quick thoughts about the ABC deal with and Comcast that Ray was talking about first segment?
Well, I think everybody's looking at distributing their content more widely. But I think the quarter-life lesson has to raise some questions. If you really are going to make this content so easily available on many different websites and cable systems, what does it do to the viewing on the broadcast network?
Yeah.
For a long time, we said, well, you know, it promotes it because people get to know the show and love the show. But if people are never going to watch it on the network, they're always going to watch it on cable. You know, the advertising model really changes. It's much less profitable. So I think that people have talked about how the whole business model has been changed by new media. I compare it to the old kids' game of 52-card pickup. Right now we've thrown the cards in the air, and nobody really knows where they're landing. And Quarter Life is an example of where you can guess where they're landing and be wrong. But going forward, ABC and the others are doing it too. CBS is doing it, not just on a few sites, but they give out material related to shows to hundreds of sites of different kinds. Whether this is a great promotion or the end of network television, best for the next show, the next time we talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Great note to end on. As always, an incredible amount of really cool information and not enough time to talk about it. But we do appreciate you coming back and being a part of the Ad Show today.
Always glad to speak with you, gentlemen. Be well.
You got it. It's Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth, and we've got more of the Advertising Show coming up in just a moment.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
No, nothing takes it off like Noxzema medicated shave.
Thanks again to Alex Ben Block here on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And as always, as I said just a few moments ago, you know, never enough time. Always a lot of great information every time we have Alex. Senior columnist for Hollywood Today. It's HollywoodToday.net, by the way. And go check out his video. I haven't done that yet. I'm going to go do it. Hey, next week we've got Terrence Noonan on the show. Terrence is the author of Starring You, The Insider's Guide to Using Television and Media to Launch Your Brand, Your Business, and Your Life. And so we'll find out what that's all about here next week on The Advertising Show. Kimberly Clark, Unilever, they're once again kind of trimming the numbers on traditional television to ramp up ROI. Basically, what they're saying, the company expects to spend about 46% of their marketing budget on television this year, down from 60% in 2004. If you looked two or three years ago, this gentleman says one of our top six consumer brands, TV, would have been ranked as the most popular channel for all six. But basically, that's not the case anymore. Package goods, Titan Unilever, also out to prove it can spend more effectively, in part by using TV. A little bit less and a little bit smarter as well. So the ad budgets aren't going away. It's just that it's going in different places, non-traditional spending and such. So, and also, what they're doing is they're focusing on fewer, bigger innovations, on some of the products as well. So logically, that would be a wise thing to do when you're in business and to trim the fat and make sure that the message that you have is getting out there to the right ears. And it never fails to amaze me how many people give you that deer in the headlights look when you say, so what are you doing beyond the traditional stuff?
Well, I don't know. What do you mean?
So with that, on that note, Patrick Meyer is here on the Advertising Show. Intuitive Marketing, I'm sure he'll have something to say about that as well. Let's listen.
Welcome to Understanding the Future Now. It's the Marketing Insider featuring Patrick Meyer.
Today I'm going to talk to you about intuitive marketing. So you're thinking, what's that? Marketing based on your gut, your intuition? Well, yeah, that's important. You may be aware that in design, packaging, graphics, ID, there's a thing going on called intuitive design. It's linking to what's right from the consumer standpoint. It's creating ideas that the consumer sees, embraces, and so right for what their needs and wants are. They're simple and they're powerful. But let's bring that over into marketing. Intuitive marketing is creating ideas and solutions and approaches that are right for the consumer, that come right out of insight-driven approaches. I'm not just talking decks and research presentations. I'm talking about ethnographic, anthropologic, down in the trenches, talking to consumers kind of insights, where you really understand what's going on in their world. I think of intuitive marketing around three words: wow, easy, and cool. The wow piece is, if they can't talk about it, don't do it. In other words, they have to scream with delight. They have to want to tell their friends. They want to become advocates. That's about wow. Second, easy. So easy, a caveman could do it. How do you touch the consumer? How do you embrace them? Where do you fit in their world? How do they buy you, embrace you, etc.? Third is cool. If you take the wow, combine it with the easy, and put a shell around it called cool. It could be cool, it could be hip, it could be nurturing, it could be loving, it could be beautiful, but it's wrapping it in emotion. Follow those three things, and you have intuitive marketing.
You've been listening to The Marketing Insider, heard every week here on The Advertising Show. Join us next week for more insight into the future of marketing.
This is Patrick Meyer as your Marketing Insider. And remember, the revolution is now. Hey, you want to know more? Go to nowing.net or send me an email at patrick@nowing.net.
Here on The Advertising Show, it's Ray Shillings along with Brad Forsyth. Thanks again to Alex Ben Block, senior columnist for Hollywood Today at hollywoodtoday.net. I'm going to check out the... Are you okay there, Brad?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to check out the... I'm going to check out that video of his daughters there. Haley Taylor is her name. And can't wait to see Alex's one as well.
Was that MySpace or YouTube?
I think he said MySpace, I think.
Yeah, I think he did. I think you're right.
I thought he said YouTube for his.
He's on YouTube, but his daughter's on MySpace. You're right.
That makes sense. Very good. Yeah. Well, what do you have there?
Well, you know, only Microsoft, I guess, could handle a $1.35 billion fine. It was handed another huge fine by the European Commission recently for failing to comply with EU court's 2004 antitrust ruling. Software giant will now have to pay the $1.35 billion
just a drop in the bucket there. Yep.
Yeah, just a petty cash for charging unreasonable prices from October 2007 for access to technical specification software. Writers need to develop programs for Microsoft and other Windows products. So, you know, the commission thinks that Microsoft, I don't know where they got this idea, is a monopolistic practice. I don't understand that.
I don't either. How interesting. Here in our home state of Texas, Hispanic spending. Of course, we've got the presidentials, the primaries coming. Telemundo, Univision, or Univision, as they say. The Hispanic market in Texas is seeing an unprecedented boom in campaign spending. So you got to know those guys are getting big bonuses at the end of the year. You know what I'm saying? Together, the candidates spend nearly $2 million in advertising to Spanish-speaking Hispanics in California. Broadcasters say spending ahead of the March 4th Texas primary could top that as well. So incredible. There's a gentleman who was in the biz. He says, I've been in Spanish television since 85. Boy, a lot has changed since then. And this is the most active season I've ever seen. He is Enrique Perez, Senior VP of Sales for Telemundo, the station group. For the first time, Hispanic media is being planned side by side with general media. Hey, what a concept, huh? Works for me.
Long overdue, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hope you enjoyed today's show here, The Advertising Show. TheAdvertisingShow.com is a great place to come anytime. And, of course, tell your friends about it as well. Thanks to Alex. And next week, it's Terrence Noonan, author of Starring You. The Insider's Guide to Using Television and Media to Launch Your Brand, Your Business, and Your Life. Gee, I wonder if Obama or Hillary has one of those, or even McCain. We'll see. And don't forget Huckabee. You've got to keep them all out there, too, right? We've got The Advertising Show brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production.